Welcome to Weekend Getaway Reviews, the show dedicated to inspiring you to break free from any excuses that are preventing you from traveling and going on more getaways. My name is Carmen Benton, and my husband Ben and I run a successful travel blog at weekendgetawayreviews.com. We love to travel and we do it a lot, and even though our trips are usually weekend getaways, we have managed to take getaways around the world because we have figured out how to fit traveling our busy schedules and budgets. Join us weekly right here to learn how we do it, and hopefully we'll get to inspire you with our adventures. Without further delay, here's today's show. Welcome everyone to Weekend Getaway Reviews, the podcast. This is Carmen Benton, and today I have a very special guest with us. She is Traveling Tania. Her name is Tania Shelburne, and she is a fellow travel blogger that I met in Twitter a while ago, and we have been collaborating with each other since then, and I had invited her to the show today so she can tell us all about her love for traveling and share her point of view of this amazing life that involves traveling as much as I do. So I want to say welcome, Tania, to the show. Thank you for being here today.
Hi, Carmen. Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited.
So you are in Indiana, right?
Yes. I live on the west side of Indianapolis in the Hoosier State.
And you were just telling me that there is like a bad storm. So if anyone hears thunderstorms, that's what's happening.
Yes. Indiana weather changes every 5 minutes, so you never know what's going to happen, but it is storming right now.
Do you really guys get like tornadoes and stuff like that?
Sometimes we do, yes. I don't think we have one of those brewing at the moment, so we should be fine.
Well, if you have to drop the phone and go running, just
I'll let you know.
So why don't you tell me a little bit about yourself, and how do you decide to start Traveling Tania?
Well, I am, I think, a typical Midwestern mother, wife, employee. I work full-time. I'm a public health professional, so I have a full-time job that helps pay the bills. I have a husband who works also, and of course, he helps pay the bills as well. And then we have my two daughters are teenagers and live with us here in Indiana. So as you can imagine, just with all those things, we are super busy people rushing around to school events and sporting things and getting our day jobs done. But at the same time, we found that my husband and I especially just really love to travel. So we're kind of committed to traveling as much as we can. And oftentimes that does include taking my daughters with us, but sometimes we do just getaways, my husband and I. And so it was this time last year that I decided, why not take that love of travel and share it with other people through a blog. So that's when I started my blog, travelingtania.com. And it's just an outlet for me to share all our fun adventures with other people, and with the goal of inspiring them to make time to make travel a priority.
You know, it's so funny. And I think that's why we probably connected, you know, since we met, because our stories are pretty similar. So we're also both two busy professionals and we're a blended family. He has his kids, I have my kids, and we got married. And so at sometimes we have as many as six kids. So it's like the Brady Bunch.
Mm-hmm.
But we love to travel. I live to travel. I work to travel.
Yes.
But because of the busy schedules and the kids and stuff, sometimes we have to just do getaways. Mm-hmm. And we've gone around the world like in 5 days. And so the last time we went to Australia this year for 5 days, and I was like so excited because I've like have shifted a paradigm about, you know, traveling 14 hours for 4 days. And, you know, I was there and 12 hours after being there, I'm like, okay, this is totally worth it. I can turn around and go back right now and say that it was worth it. So where are we going next? Right. And so, yeah, it's traveling is like a chicken soup for the soul. I tell everyone that. And I love people who want to inspire others to travel because it's good.
Yes, I think we are definitely kindred spirits in that way. And yeah, our schedules are super busy, but that doesn't mean we can't make some time for travel. And for us, sometimes that's, you know, a good week-long trip overseas. Sometimes it's, you know, getting away to the beach because we like resting and relaxing too. Now, when we go to Europe, we are on the go and we want to pack in as much as we can. But we even take advantage of just short little weekend getaways or day trips. Sometimes it's even just exploring our own city that we live in, that sometimes when you live here and you see things all the time, you miss out, and if you don't have that tourist mentality. And so if we only have an afternoon, we'll get out and explore something that's kind of right in our backyard.
Right, right. I remember that was one of the first of your posts that I read, and I was like, oh, that makes so much sense. I have never been a tourist in Alaska. And I started doing that thanks to you. So I appreciate that.
Awesome.
You had that. So how often do you travel, Tanya?
Well, I guess it depends on what you mean by travel, because like I said, we'll do day trips and go different places, you know, almost every weekend or at least every other weekend. But I think our traveling as of late has increased because we are so excited about it. And with the blog, that gives us even more motivation. But so like this year, we did a trip to Europe with my husband's mom and stepdad. In the springtime, and we just booked a fall trip to Europe. We're going to Italy with my two daughters. So for the first time ever, we're doing Europe twice in the same year, which is a little crazy for us. And then we did a week-long beach vacation this summer. So three big vacations. And then we're also planning to travel up to northern Wisconsin. My parents have a home up there on the lake. So we're going to do a really long Thanksgiving weekend with them. So those are some of our bigger vacations this year. But like I said, we'll pack in all kinds of weekend getaways in there too.
That's awesome. And so, you know, you mentioned there are all kind of different trips, like, you know, Europe is very to the beach or so which one is your favorite? What do you like the most about, you know, about traveling? Which one do you prefer? Like, if you can choose, like, this is the one type of travel I like to do the best.
Oh, geez. Well, I hope nobody will ever make me only be allowed to do one kind of travel, because I love them all. I mean, I definitely love a week at the beach where there's a lot of relaxing and sun and fun and all of that. But right now I get really excited about traveling to Europe. For us, we've been a couple times, so we feel like we understand enough about how it works that we can really dig in and have fun. It's not super intimidating to us anymore, yet there's still so much to see and explore. And so like this trip to Italy we have planned, we're going back to a few sites that we've been to already, but we're just poring over travel books and podcasts and videos, and we get so excited to learn about where we're going. So for us, a lot of the fun of travel is before we even get there, just understanding the culture and what things there are to see. And I think when you're a busy person like we are and you don't have a ton of time to travel, you want to make the most of the time you have. So for us, the way we do that is by doing a lot of planning, which we really enjoy, and making sure that then we're maximizing our time over there. So we already know what things we really want to see when we're there and what things we can probably skip and how we can see them in the most efficient way possible.
So that's very funny that you mentioned that, because, well, for all of you who are listening, when you are actually going to be listening to this podcast, I'm going to be in Europe.
Yay!
So, I actually going to be in Europe from August 6th to the 17th, so like 10 days. And one of the reasons I invited Tanya is because she's going to be telling us about the things that Americans usually find unusual when they go to Europe. And we'll do that in a little bit. But talking about the planning last night, because I'm getting close to, you know, I'm actually leaving next Tuesday. I was like doing my final plannings, and even to the point of like, where I'm gonna go have lunch in this city. Mm-hmm. And I was looking at the menus, and I was like, my mouth was like watering. Like, I'm such a foodie. Oh, I cannot wait to go eat.
That's one of the best parts about travel, definitely the food.
So this is what I would like to do, Tanya. I'm gonna take a break, a very short commercial break, and then when we're back, I want to hear, what are those five things Americans find unusual when they go to Europe? Does that sound like a good idea?
That sounds great.
Okay, we'll be back in a second. Okay, and we're back with Weekend Getaway Reviews, the podcast, and I'm here with Tanya from Traveling Tanya, and we're talking about Europe. So she loves to travel to Europe. She's been there a couple of times. I'm going to be there by the time you're listening to this podcast. And she has a very, very unique article in her blog right now that talks about the five things Americans find unusual in Europe. And when I read it, because I've been in Europe too before, I was like, totally. And so I want her to share with all of you those five things because they are, you know, eye-opening for sure. And so why don't you go ahead and tell us what are those five things that you find people who hasn't been in Europe before find like shocking?
Great. I would love to. And really the thought behind this blog post came from our trip to Europe this spring when we took my mother and father-in-law. And it was their first time being in Europe. So it was kind of interesting to see Europe through their eyes. And there were several things that kind of stuck out that I think maybe they weren't quite prepared for. So it reminded me, oh yeah, these things you kind of need to be prepared for, because when you are traveling somewhere different, everybody doesn't do things the same way you might do at home. And I think part of the joy of traveling is embracing those differences. But it does help to kind of anticipate them and expect them so you're prepared for that. So I wrote this blog post about five different things that Americans might find a little unusual in Europe. And the first one, a couple of these have to do with food and beverage, but first one being beverages and ice, or rather lack thereof. So my
yes.
my father-in-law in particular, everywhere we would go, I mean, he was just amazed that there was never ice in his drink. And so he would ask for ice all the time, and they wouldn't bring it to him, but they'd bring him a cube or two. And that was a little off-putting to him because he was used to, you know, ice in his drink. So it's just something to be aware of that that's not customary. It's also not customary that they just bring you water to your table. I know in most American restaurants, the first thing you get is ice water at your table for everybody. But that's not so common over there. If you are getting water at your table, more than likely they're going to ask you if you want sparkling or still water. So
right.
If they're used to traditional kind of tap water, then obviously you're going to want still, which is what I would always get. But Europeans are more likely to drink sparkling water.
You know, what's funny is because, so my dad was from Spain. And so I suppose I had that influence on me. Mm-hmm. And we grew up drinking sparkling water. So it wasn't until I read your article that I'm like, oh, that's actually true. But it wasn't like that shocking to me because I do like sparkling water. And mm-hmm. also I'm always cold, like always cold. And so I like to drink beverage, even like Diet Coke at room temperature. I'm crazy that way.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm.
But it's true because I mean those things didn't like shock me when I went there the first time, but it's because of who I am and how I do things. But when I was reading your article, it's like so observant. I mean, yes, that people need to be aware of that.
Well, and it's important to remember too that throughout Europe, every place doesn't do everything the same way. Same thing here in the United States. I'm sure things are done very differently in Alaska than they might be here in Indiana, but these are some of the at least more common things I think that I noticed. And it's funny you bring up Diet Coke because that's my big weakness. So I'm a bit of a Diet Coke addict. So I learned pretty early on that you can find Diet Cokes over there. It's generally called Coco Light. And it's easier to find those in a pharmacy, a little small grocery stores that are everywhere. It's actually much cheaper to buy your pop and your Diet Coke that way than it is in a restaurant. If you order a Coke beverage in a restaurant, you're going to pay as much or more than you would for that glass of wine. So when in Europe, I drink wine with lunch instead of Diet Coke. And I enjoy that.
Good to know.
Yeah. My husband, on the other hand, is a big coffee drinker. I'm not a coffee drinker, but he's got to have his coffee. And so we have studied and learned how to order coffee in Europe too. Because again, if you just go in and order for coffee, what you're likely going to get is a teeny tiny cup of espresso. And again, when my mother-in-law ordered her first coffee in Paris and got this tiny cup of very bitter coffee, she wasn't real thrilled with that. And so we had to educate her a little bit about how to order. And if you want the more traditional coffee that's got cream and milk and some sugar in it, then you're probably going to order a latte or a cafe Americana or something a little bit different. And you can't even find Starbucks over in Europe. So there you're going to get about the same thing you would get here. But it's good to know going in, especially if you need that coffee fix. That's for sure.
That would be me. I'm already in my third cup today. And by the way, we're like 4 hours different. So it's lunchtime here. But yes.
And, you know, I'm all about exploring and trying new things when you travel, but there are some things that you want to be comfortable. And so if you need a cup of coffee to get you going in the morning, then by all means, you know, find what you need to make it a pleasant travel experience, you know, but try some new things along the way too.
Right. So what else? What are some of the other things that you find unusual?
So some other things when it comes to eating, so dining in restaurants, one of the big things that I've noticed is they're in no hurry. You know, here in the United States, a common phrase that I've heard, and this might be if you're working in the restaurant industry, is churn and burn. And I don't know if everybody knows that term, but that's when waiters want you to leave your table rather quickly. So they're going to hurry and bring your food. They kind of want you to get out and somebody new to come because they're working off tips. So it's a quick dining experience usually. In Europe, meals go on and they really want you to experience and enjoy the pleasure of dining. So you often, if you are in a hurry, you need to get your waiter's attention. You need to really ask them to bring things to you quickly, especially the check. They are not going to be rushing you out to bring that bill to you. So just something to keep in mind. And that's not them being rude. That's just kind of how the culture is over there. They meal times are also a little bit different over there. They tend to eat later. So a little bit later than the traditional American lunchtime, and definitely later for dinner. It's kind of early for them to eat dinner at 7:30 or 8. 8:30 or 9 might be more typical dinner time for them. So again, just kind of paying attention to that, so you know when restaurants are going to be open and serving you, and just kind of what's customary.
I thought that that was mostly in Spain, but I guess it's throughout Europe, which is good to know.
Yes, I've heard it's definitely in lots of parts of Europe. Now, if you're in the more touristy areas, then sometimes they're catering to Americans and they might be open earlier. But I always encourage people, try not to just go to the super touristy areas. You want to go to the authentic dining experiences too. So
right.
Some of those might be a little bit later. The other interesting thing with restaurants, unlike in America, most of the waiters are getting a really good fair wage. And it's pretty prestigious to be a waiter in a nice restaurant over there. So tipping is very different. Whereas our waiters here in America, they really live off their tips. And so they want a good tip, and they're going to show you really good service to hopefully get that tip. Over in Europe, tipping is not even customary when you go to restaurants like that. So oftentimes they say you can round up your bill or leave some coins, but you're not tipping 15 or 20% like we do here in the US, because they're already getting paid a good wage for that service.
Got it. Yes.
So I'll move past eating now, and we'll get to restrooms, because that's another thing that's a little bit different in Europe that we found. And on this last trip, it really dawned on me that everywhere I went, the toilet paper was really rough. There is not that really nice, thick, quilted toilet paper over there, but I can get by without that. The only thing I can surmise is that a lot of the plumbing over there is old, and so they don't want you using a lot of that and kind of gunking up their plumbing system. And the other thing you'll find, it is harder to find a restroom, a public restroom over there. Here in the U.S., you know, we know you can pop in any restaurant store and find a restaurant. It's definitely a lot harder over there. If you are not purchasing something in the restaurant, then oftentimes you cannot use the restroom. It might even be locked, and not all stores are just going to have a restroom. And some places you go, you will have to pay to use the restroom. And I always say, you know, if you got to go, you got to go. So even if you do have to pay a euro to go to the bathroom, you know, it's worth it. But you also want to kind of time those things. And if you're in a museum, you know, use the restroom while you're there. Don't wait until you get out into a big area and then can't find a public restroom.
But you had a good point there. So because when you got to go, you got to go. Mm-hmm. And a lot of, I have seen people, places actually do charging you a euro or two.
Yes.
It's good. It's a good idea. And I am actually telling this to myself because I'm the type of person who never have cash on her.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
To have actually cash so you can actually pay, because they wouldn't take credit card to go to the toilet.
Right, right. Always good to have a little of the local currency in your pocket for
yes.
sure.
Yes.
The other thing that I've noticed with accommodations or hotels, of course, they're a little bit different over there as well. You can find just some of the most charming hotels and places to stay at. And that's one thing I love about going to Europe. So we try to stay away from the more modernized, you know, high rises like you might find here and find something a little bit more authentic. The good thing is most of those hotels have been upgraded. And so most of them do have private bathrooms. You know, it used to be a few decades ago, European hotels, you were always sharing a bathroom with several other rooms. So most of the time, that's not the case. Now, what we have found is that air conditioning is not necessarily a given over there. So especially if you are traveling in warmer months and you need some good air conditioning, or you're used to that, you know, to sleep and to be comfortable, then you want to find that out ahead of time. I know one hotel we were at, it wasn't super warm outside and they did have air conditioning, but they didn't have it turned on because it just wasn't quite the season yet where they would have the air conditioning on. So it's much more common that you're going to throw open your windows and let that nice breeze from outside come in. But just something to kind of keep in mind and be prepared for.
And because of that, and this is actually a personal experience, because you're probably going to open your window because most hotels don't have air conditioning. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, and this is not to get anyone paranoid because this happens anywhere and everywhere, you know, there could be thieves. I recommend mm-hmm. you to go into a high floor because mm-hmm. I had a friend, we were in Paris, it was like 15 years ago, and we had different rooms, and she was in a lower room that I was, and someone got into the room and stole her camera. Nothing happened to her, her passport, which is I consider the most valuable. Everything else you can yes. be replaced, you know, but your passport is like you really need to make sure you have it with you. But yeah, someone got into the room and stole her camera. So after that time, I always make sure I request like floors where it's very difficult to get to from the ground anyways.
Yes, that is smart. And I do know most hotels in Europe will have a safe in the room. So that's something you can always ask about too. And definitely if you have expensive things, you might want to lock those up when you leave for sure. The other thing I thought was interesting, several hotels we've stayed at, they still use a regular key system as opposed to swipe cards that we're more used to now in the US. And oftentimes they will have you leave that key at the front desk every time you go out and do your sightseeing. And that's because it's very expensive for them to replace lost keys like that. And so a couple places we've been, to encourage you not to take that key with you when you're out sightseeing. It'll be a really big, heavy key or keychain that you, the last thing you want to do is lug that around. So it's very helpful to remind you to drop that off at the front desk before you leave.
I have not seen that actually, but I can see how that's the case.
Yes. And we've also experienced some great Airbnbs. That's another way that we like to sometimes book stays, both here in the United States and internationally. And we've had great Airbnb experiences in Europe as well as in America. So to me, that's a neat way to really feel like a local when you're getting a whole apartment to yourself and a little bit more space to spread out. And so we're really excited. We just booked an Airbnb in Venice for our trip in October. So I'm super excited to check that out and feel like I'm really living in Venice for a little while.
Nice. I'm jealous.
Well, I'll let you know how it goes.
Yes. Yes.
So one other thought I had on here, as far as what Americans might find a little unusual in Europe, is just transportation in general. And I know that transportation, even in the U.S., varies dramatically. And for me specifically here in Indiana, we do not have a great public transportation system. I know some U.S. cities have amazing public transportation, but we don't. So we primarily get around by getting in our personal vehicles and driving everywhere. And what's interesting is when you're in Europe, there are so many forms of transportation and so many just really fun and neat ways to get around. So I encourage people to try all those different options. And on this last trip when we were in Europe, we traveled by airplane, of course, to get there. We did a boat trip. We rode the subway. We did get a rental car. We used Uber, which works great in several European countries. We rode a funicular to get up a steep hill. We rode some gondolas, buses. So just so many fun, neat ways to get around. And most of those, you know, with just a little bit of patience, you can figure them out pretty quickly and usually are pretty economical as well.
Yeah, I remember I used to have a job when I was in California that required me to go to Europe every quarter. And I basically would go to Amsterdam. But I had some friends that live in Belgium, so I will stay over for the weekend and take the train from Holland to Belgium. And, you know, even though the train goes from speaking Dutch to speaking French and I couldn't understand any word of anything, you know, it just takes you one time to get lost and then you figure it all out.
Yes. And people in Europe, I found, are super friendly and super helpful. And I do not speak any other languages fluently. So when we go to Europe, you know, we usually know a little bit of the language where we're going, not a lot. But we found that almost everywhere we could find people that speak fairly good English once we try a little bit in their language. And even when we're not finding people that speak, you know, our language, we're still able to communicate enough and people are usually super helpful. So when it comes to getting lost and needing directions or needing to figure out how to use the transportation system, I find that people are really nice and really helpful.
Even in France, because I find that to be true, except for France.
Well, we have mostly only spent time in Paris, so I can't speak for all of France, but we have there. So I know Paris definitely gets a bad rap for not always being super friendly, but we haven't had any issues at all. So I think go in with an open mind and expect people to be polite. And if you start at least greeting them in their local language, I think that goes a long way to get them to understand that you are trying and they really quickly pick up on the fact that you're not fluent in their language and then they'll accommodate you.
Right, right. Okay, so do you have any other? I lost count. Did we cover five or you
we
still have another?
We did cover all five, yes.
Okay, great. So I wanted to make sure our listeners have a way to find you, because I do find that your articles are very educational and I personally like to read your blog as well. So I will put in the description of the podcast, all your information. But do you want to tell us what is the best way if someone wants to follow you and become your raving fan? What would be the best way for them to do that?
Well, I would love for anyone who would like to follow me to get on my blog, which is travelingtanya.com. And I will spell that for you because I found that even the word traveling is spelled differently depending on where you're from. But I spell traveling T-R-A-V-E-L, just one L, I-N-G. And then Tanya is T-A-N-Y-A.com. And so obviously going on the blog, if they want to sign up for my newsletter, I send out an email every Friday and just kind of give people a little more background on where I'm going to be traveling and what's going on and what I've had on the blog that week. So I'd love them to sign up for that. But I also have a Facebook page and it's at Traveling Tanya Shelburne. So they are welcome to follow me there. I post a lot of things. Usually when I'm traveling, I don't have time to actually stop and write blog posts, but I love to post on Facebook and do little short videos and show them pictures and just kind of tell them where I'm at. So Facebook's a great way to find me. You mentioned you found me on Twitter. So that's another way. On Twitter, I'm just at Tanya Shelburne. And then I do dabble a little bit in Instagram. I find I'm a little old for that market. So I am there and still trying to figure it out. But on Instagram, I am T.S. Shelburne. And then I have a Pinterest page, too. So I'm kind of hitting all the different social media platforms because I think people of all ages and all different interests enjoy travel and can benefit from it. So I'm just trying to find people wherever I can.
That's great. And again, as a travel blogger myself, you know, I find your articles super educational, super easy to read. And I encourage everyone to go check you out because I really like what you have to offer. So do you have anything else to add?
Yes. Well, and I appreciate that, Carmen. It's been so much fun partnering with you. I know we've swapped some guest posts, and my last post on my article was about your trip to Hawaii, and that's one place I have not been yet. So it was fun to read about your experience there, and I really hope to get there one day soon.
Yes, Hawaii is very close and dear to my heart because I love the ocean. I love the sun. And it's actually the easiest, closest place I can get to from Alaska. So we go there a lot. I'm a lucky girl. If you want, at least three times a year, I get to go to Hawaii. So that's awesome for me. Oh, yeah. But yes,
I'm jealous. Yes. and I can't wait to hear about your trip to Europe.
Yes. Yeah, so by the time you hear this, I'll be in Europe. So probably the next podcasts and articles coming up are going to be all about Europe. I am going to be featuring the article that Tanya talked about today in my blog as well. So I will leave you the link down. They probably going to go at the same time, the podcast and the articles. That could be another way you can find Tanya. And with that said, I want to say thank you so much for being in the show today, Tanya. It's been a pleasure. And as you always know, I want you to keep traveling because life is a getaway. I will see you in the next show. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed today's episode of We Can Get Away Review, the podcast. And until our next traveling adventure, I hope you got inspired to get rid of the excuses and book your next trip. Travel often and travel more because life is your getaway.